Good morning. It's 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Joining me in the studio this morning is a familiar face around Sitka, but you've been gone a while. She's flown back, if you pardon the expression. Alexis Will is here. Hi, Alexis. How are you doing?
Great. Good morning, Rob.
Alexis is a master's student at UAF, and I have actually heard about you. Your mom is a great spokesperson for what you've been up to, and it sounds like you've been doing some fascinating stuff, some seabird research off in the Bering Sea and stuff, but you're coming back this summer to work here.
Yeah, it's great. So I've been everywhere from the Aleutians to the Antarctic, and I get to end up right where I started on St. Lazaria.
And that's okay, because St. Lazaria is, I mean, of all these places, St. Lazaria is up there for it's the opportunity it affords scientists, right?
Yeah, it's a pretty neat place. There's a lot going on in a really small location. It's like 2.5 acres of area, and there's a lot of action there.
Okay, so you're working on a master's project, and as master's projects go, this is big. I read your proposal. You have a lot to do over the next couple of summers, and it's all about a bird, an adorable bird. Okay, we'll put it on the table. You're going to be out studying rhinoceros auklets, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I'll be looking at their foraging ecology for the next 2 summers.
And I read your proposal, and I think it's interesting, and I wondered if you could sort of flesh it out a little bit, because I know that a lot of times when scientists take on a project or an animal or a species, they're looking at an animal that's in trouble and they're trying to explain why. You know, is it climate change? Is it, you know, is there some problem in the food supply? The rhinoceros auklet is actually doing well.
Yeah, so unlike a lot of species that people choose to study, we call them rhinos because it takes a lot less time.
Okay.
And then people think we study large gray animals with horns.
Okay, henceforth. We'll be talking about rhinos. Okay.
So rhinoceros auklets are really cool because they breed all the way from Southern California to Japan, and sort of this band across the North Pacific. And their diet ranges from everything from Japanese anchovy, which are really high-quality fish in the seabird world, to rockfish, which don't offer as many nutrients, but they do great on this really wide range of diets. And they tend to do pretty well between years, even though food availability might change a lot. And so looking at why these birds are so successful, or how they're successful raising their chicks in a variable environment, can give us some insight into what to look for in other species that might make them successful in a changing environment. And so instead of going at, you know, climate change or even changes driven by human activity in a negative way to see, you know, oh, why is this animal declining? We can look at a successful species and say, well, why is it doing well? And then look around to see what other species might be doing well, too, if they experience similar changes.
Well, how exactly do you focus in on a seabird success? I mean, you can go out to St. Lazaria. Plenty of people do. They don't go on it, but you can come up to it in your boat, and you can see fat, happy rhino parents and their, you know, fat, happy chicks. But how do you sort of get the data you need to determine an animal's success?
So in a couple ways. One way, the Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service uses seabirds to monitor ocean health. And so one way that they look at success is population trends, what the birds are bringing back to feed their chicks, and then also their annual reproductive success. The way that I'm going to be looking at it is looking at foraging strategies of the parents to see rhinoceros auklets are really neat. They have a really long nestling period, so when the chick is in the nest growing. And so this covers about 54 days, and a lot can happen in the ocean in 54 days. You know, new fish move into an area, fish move out of the area. So they kind of cover, in a season, a lot of different ocean conditions. And so by looking at how they adjust their foraging behavior over that time and the adult diet themselves, I can get kind of a handle on how hard they're having to work potentially to find food for themselves and their chick. So that's a little bit more of a refined look at how well they're doing, really. And then what I'm going to be developing is hopefully a method for agencies like the Fish and Wildlife Service to be able to go in and to take a grown chick, so a chick right before it leaves the nest, and to pull a feather from that chick and look at the content of a stress hormone called corticosterone, which is associated with high or low food availability. And so developing this method to see what kind of diets lead to higher or lower stress. So making the data on chick diet a little bit more clear as to what it's telling us, but then also potentially developing this new method that could be used on any seabird colony. You just need to visit it maybe once in a season and grab a couple feathers, and you could say, oh, well, these chicks were fat and happy, or I thought they were, but they're actually struggling a little.
Interesting. And somebody could always, and you'll be cited in their report.
Well, we'll see. I have to successfully do this first. But.
And you talk about foraging strategies. Again, I just sort of, I skimmed through your project proposal, and rhinos, they actually, you say they sort of divide their feeding effort. I mean, sometimes the adult is just feeding for itself, and sometimes the adult is out feeding for its nestling, and that seems to be part of, outfeeding for its chick, and that seems to be part of a component of its success.
Yeah, so rhinos are really neat. They actually only come back to the colony at night to feed their chick, and so a lot of other birds, when it comes to adjusting their foraging behavior to meet the needs of their chick and to accommodate changes in the environment, they can do things like adjusting the length of their foraging trips, adjusting how many times they come back to deliver food to their chick. But rhinos are really restricted because they only can come back once in a 24-hour period, which is at dusk. They use the cover of night, you know, as a protection against predators. And so they kind of have this a different set of factors to sort of balance when they're out there, because they still need to feed for themselves, but they have all day. You know how long the sun's up now, and so they have all day to go out there and find food for themselves, but then they really need to maximize that single trip they make for their chick's food. And so it's in their best interest, if they think about these things as much as we do, to get really high quality fish and as much of that as possible. And so I'm hoping to see whether or not their efforts in finding that fish change depending on if that fish is available or not to them. And that's our thought, is that it might, but who knows, maybe these rhino chicks can eat whatever fish that they're fed and be raised successfully. So maybe the parents have to work the same amount no matter what's in the ocean.
I did notice that you are kind of going into this study with an idea of what you think you may find, but it sounds like you're open to the possibility that it could be different.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for reading a scientific proposal. We're supposed to have these predictions, so that looks like we've actually thought our project through instead of just saying, well, I'd really love to know where rhinoceros ocelots go. That's really what I just want to know. But
okay. But you got to get there through the process. When you say the ocelots or the rhinos come in under the cover of night, that's probably going to be a busy time for you. You'll be there waiting for them, right?
Yeah, so I love to pretend that I'm some sort of ninja of the night. Really, that just involves sitting still in salmonberry bushes on a wet, muddy ground. It's not as glamorous as I like to pretend. But yeah, so I go out and I'm catching them as they come into their burrows at night. So I go out there and I set my traps and I lay in wait, and I pretty much wait to hear them come in, and they're not stealthy. They, even though they're using the cover of darkness, it sounds like attack helicopters are coming in at you, and you know, they're crashing into tree trunks and falling through the branches, and it's kind of like being in a little bit of a war zone out there.
A seabird is a little bit out of its element when it comes in to land, right?
Yeah, especially when it happens to be nesting in a forest. And that's one of the really unique things about St. Lazare, is that very rarely do you find seabirds nesting under a sika spruce canopy.
It's interesting that they haven't adapted better to just landing, but I guess they're doing so well, and there's something about, you know, the soft mossy ground that they're and they're surviving okay.
Yeah, and the one thing I like about seabirds is they're really very sturdy, hardy animals, and so even if they do tear into a tree trunk or dive bomb into the ground, they're slightly dazed, but they really bounce back pretty fast.
Okay, and so do you catch them kind of in that moment of confusion when they land?
Well, I would love to, except I'll be targeting specific individuals, and I have this whole list of, kind of a criteria of the perfect rhinoceros auklet for my study, which isn't, it's not as bad as if I were looking for a mate of my own, but, right. They have to be a breeding bird, and for some of my tags, they actually have to be a certain weight, and I have to recapture the birds that I put my tags out on, because unfortunately, rhinos are just too small to put tags that will transmit the data back to me, so I have to get the tag to get my information. And so what I'm doing is I'm actually targeting burrow entrances, and the bird has to be going into the burrow with fish, so I know it has a chick. Okay. And then so I can target that bird again by trapping at that burrow entrance.
And the tag is a little unit that records GPS data.
Yeah, so I have two types. I have a GPS tag, and it's about half of the length of a pink eraser, and about the same height. And I've deployed some GPS tags a couple years ago on MERS, and in that time it went from, sealing them in these waterproof bags with these torches and taping them, and now it's just the single unit that's half the size. It's amazing how much technology has improved.
And do you put it on the rhino's legs?
On the backs, actually, yes. Yeah. So I tape it to the back feathers, and then it's on there for hopefully just 3 to 5 days. And then I have another tag that is going on their leg to look at their diving behavior.
Okay, and that records like depth and temperature and things,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. It's called a temperature depth recorder.
Sure, and you don't crunch these numbers when you're out there. This is just the data gathering part.
Yeah, so I will be looking at the GPS locations, which is a really pretty slick process. I just have to have the St. Louis area and Sitka Sound area cached in Google Earth when I go out there, and then I can get a little bit of a sneak peek at the data as soon as I download it. I can view it in that just to make sure it's working and see if I need to adjust the sampling times on the tags.
Okay. And people listening right now are going, some of them are probably going, wow, this is really cool. Other people are going, who in the world would want to spend time out on Lazaria in the middle of the night catching birds? But part of this project is there's an outreach component. You're going to be talking to students in the high schools this fall and coming back to town and doing the doing library presentations and things. So
yeah, so part of this is a piece of a much larger project, and it's all funded by the North Pacific Research Board, and then also with quite a bit of help from the Fish and Wildlife Service. And this is actually part of a fish project. Surprisingly, I'm spending all this time with these birds, but they're looking at ground fish recruitment and sort of the Gulf of Alaska ecosystem. And we're part of the ecosystem, too, and so understanding what's going on out there is definitely a piece of what I'll be doing and what they're doing as well.
And it'll be this summer and next summer.
Yeah.
All right. Alexis, thanks a lot for taking time to come in and talk about it. And it sounds like it's going to be just a good time out there. You make it sound very appealing. I should leave. We should leave on one note. Lazaria is an incredible... It is the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge, and it is absolutely incredibly dense with life, with nests. I mean, there are some birds. I'm thinking the oyster catchers who just like lay their eggs right on the rocks. I mean, you can hardly take a step on that island without risking the life of something. It's definitely to be discouraged that people go out on this area.
Right. So because it is pretty much every square inch of that island is covered with something that's breeding, we do ask that people stay off the island. However, I mean, it's right there. If I wasn't working on it, I'd go out and paddle around it. It's definitely worth coming out and checking out. The biggest thing if you're on the water is just paying attention to the MERS, especially to not get too close to them, and you'll start to see them head bob and you don't want them to start doing any dancing on the rocks because they'll fly off and then you've created a huge mess.
And that's that gets them upset. So the people you see out on St. Lazaria are scientists like Alexis Will. There are other researchers out there working, and the best way to really find out what's going on is to actually talk to them when they're here in town. Thanks again for coming in.
Well, thanks for having
Alexis. Me. Alexis Will is a scientist. She's a master's student at UAF. She's going to be studying the foraging strategies of the rhinoceros auklet on St. Lazaria Island this summer.